最近に見つかったウイルスでありまして、今日しゃべられる、先生がですね、世界に最近よく見つけられたというウイルスで、今年の雑誌のサイエンスに載っている、ウイルスです。それから、この先生は非常にアクティブに、研究されていて、非常に有名な雑誌にたくさん論文も投稿して、多分見られる方もおられたかもしれません。で、今日は特別にお願いして、比較的臨床的な話、それから、どういうふうにして見つけたかという話をしていただくようにお願いしています。個人的に言いますと、この先生実は4年ほど前に初めてウイルス学というのを、やりたいということで、私の部屋に10日ぐらい急に来られて、10日ぐらい研究されてて、それがどうもウイルスの研究を始めたそうで、そういう意味じゃこの新しいウイルスを分離して、研究を始めたというふうに言われると、私自身も非常に嬉しい思いがするところでありまして、英語はですね、非常に達者な先生ですけれども、ひょっとすると、皆さんが英語をパーフェクトに理解できるかどうか分かりません。ということで、少しだけイントロダクションを重ねていきたいと思います。この大変ほとんど A なのでよく分かると思うんですけども、このニパウイルスというのは非常に恐ろしいパラミキソウイルス、ハシカとかオタフカゼの仲間のウイルスです。それでこの先生見つけられたのは、これが、コウモリですね。コウモリからそれから豚に行って、豚から人間に来たというようなストーリーをお話しされるそうです。スライド少し見せていただきましたけども、そういう話ですね。それからそれ以外にも、コウモリはやはりまだ我々が知らないウイルスを持ってて、そのウイルスがひょっとするとまた我々に感染して何か病気と関係あるかもしれないという話をされるはずです。そういうことで多少短い時間ですけれども、この先生に英語でちょっとご応していただきますので、少し英語をテレビで見るような英語でちょっとないので、若干分かりにくかったということで、もし分かりにくいとかありましたら、この中英語の他社の先生もたくさんおられますから、トランスレート多少していただいてありがたいというふうに思います。それでは、I would like to call Dr. Chua。He's going to talk on Nipah virus, a newly emergent paramyxovirus, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to Professor Ikuta and Mish Murray for inviting me over to share some experience on the Nipah virus outbreak. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry. My sincere apology, I have to present in English because I'm unable to present it in Japanese language. I hope any problem you can actually, you want to know more, you can actually see me afterwards. Okay? First one, please. And actually, the story of Nipah virus is a very terrible, tragic story for Malaysia. It not only results in the loss of billions of dollars. Next slide, please. This is the result of the virus, and as I said, it not only result in the loss of our money, and actually more than half of the Malaysian's pig farm being end up this stage. And most of this is the pig farm, and more than half of the pig population, that means more than 1 million of the pigs being removed. Next slide, please. And this is a site. What you see now is actually, this is a result. The hole dug, most of the pigs being hurt inside. After that being shot, and then they put the quicklime, then before they buried, to remove more than 1 million pigs to control the disease. And not only the economic loss, next slide, please, it's more important what the people suffer. And this is the family who lost the breadwinner. And the sad thing is that the breadwinner died, though those we cannot earn to this thing, they will have depend on somebody to take care of them. And just this short and half an hour, I don't think I can go through in detail. I will just give the overview of the outbreak. And as far as Nipah virus is concerned, not only the virus is new, the manifestation, the disease in human, in pigs, there are some new features. And not only that, virological finding, histopathological finding, and there are something new to learn of. Next slide, please. And this is just to show Southeast Asia. Malaysia consists of two portions. One is Peninsular Malaysia, and this is the East Malaysia, consists of Sarawak and Sabah. Probably now you hear a lot of news. A lot of these people go for tourists, being kidnapped over to the Philippines. And next slide, please. And actually, the outbreak started somewhere in, officially it's mentioned started in September 1998. In actual fact, there are cases earlier than that. So officially, in September 1998, the outbreak started somewhere in the northern part of Peninsular Malaysia, somewhere here, near the town called Ipoh, in the Kenta district. And by February, the disease actually has spread down to this southern state called Negeri Sembilan. And Sepang Airport is just here, the new airport is about 50 miles from the new outbreak, the second outbreak area. And the outbreak, the spread is essentially because of the transfer of the infected pigs, which have not shown obvious symptoms, spread over not only here, actually also spread over to Penang. Fortunately, there is no smuggle of the infected pig up to Thailand. Next slide, please. And this is the cases of encephalitis over a period of outbreak. In September 1998, there are cases, about cases here and there. Altogether in Para State, there are about 10 cases of encephalitis cases. And of course, when it spread down to the Negeri Sembilan, the southern states, and this is the very intensive pig farming area, there is a sudden increase in number of cases, especially the period of March and April. Of course, now we know with the control measures, the right measures, the thing stopped. And of course, now the epidemic is over. Next slide, please. And as far as the epidemiology concern, 90% actually of the cases is something to do with close contact with pigs. More than 93% of the people who are infected with case kind of encephalitis are somehow pig farm worker. Even the family member, they are actually pig farm, they help up with the pig farm. Next slide, please. And as far as sex ratio concerned, mainly actually young, fit adult male. The female are actually, most of them, their spouses. That means their wife help up in the pig farm. Next slide, please. As the pigs industry essentially involve the normally, because the Muslim cannot handle pigs, so you won't be surprised, most of them actually are the Chinese, who are mainly the farm women of the farm. And of course, the Indians and some races like Bangladeshi or Nepalese, who are actually foreign workers, come over in working the farm. You'd be surprised, you won't be surprised why there's 1% of Malay involved. This 1% Malay is actually the soldier who are actually involved culling the pigs, shooting the pigs. And in fact, two of the soldiers was infected because they failed to take precautionary measures. They think it's not dangerous, and this account for the 1%. Next slide, please. As far as the clinical presentation illness, the universally represented fever, but if those come now with encephalitis, they will present with headache, dizziness, vomiting, but this is the usual presentation of encephalitis. But what is important, unique in Nipah virus infection in human, next slide please, is a condition we call segmental myoclonus. Segmental myoclonus, essentially, we think is probably the Nipah virus have gone to the neuron, affect mainly the neuron, motor neuron at the lower part of the brainstem or upper cervical cord or lower cervical cord, spinal cord. Probably you can see better if it's a video for segmental myoclonus. Essentially, when they affect the abdominal muscle, it's mainly because of the diaphragm, they got rhythmic contraction. And very characteristic is that the contraction, like a snake, the ripple, And this is the relative of the patient who actually try traditional treatment. Normally we will allow them, provided they don't interfere our treatment. The traditional treatment, of course, they tie a number of chopsticks, they hit onto the, when the muscle contract, they will just hit on it. Next slide, please. Similarly, the segmental myoclonus, sometimes in some patients, they occur at the lower limb. When occur in the lower limb, normally the limbs will move this way. They will move this way, and of course, the traditional is simply they use a chopstick, just hit on it. Of course, it doesn't, it has no bearing on treatments. And next slide, please. But what's important is that we found that there are certain conditions definitely associated with high fatality. Initially, we thought probably the Nipah virus infection not only human and pigs, essentially it's a systemic disease. And the brain, the CNS, get the main blunt of the disease, and what killed the patient is essentially the brain. And we actually can confirm the virus not only found in the brain, they found on the lung, the kidney, the liver, in fact it's any part of the brain. The main site of replication of the virus essentially is the endothelial cell or the blood vessel. The brain blood vessel essentially is the main artery. When the endothelial cell get involved, the endothelial cells, they fuse one another. I will just show you in the histopath slide. They form giant cell, and of course, when the endothelial cells shear off, they form thrombosis and block off the supply of the brain. Initially, we thought these are the ones that kill the patient, but in actual fact, what's important is because the virus actually replicate a neuron, mainly in the brainstem. Any other patient which show signs like deep coma, abnormal dorsal effect, dorsal reflex is actually is a reflex testing the brainstem function. Abnormal pupil, if they affect the brainstem, especially the vasomotor center, they will patient get hypertension, tachycardia. These are all bad signs. Next slide, please. And not only that, we find that if the virus isolated in the brain from the cerebral fluid, it correlates with very bad prognosis. And this part of the work actually was done later, after we find that there are certain conditions causes the death. And also on top of that, we try to isolate virus from live patient, from patient who survive, we can't get, then we pick up all the whatever CSF or we culture the whole thing. And out of the 27 patients who died, 17 of them we can grow the virus easily, despite the CSF being stored in minus 20 for 3 months. But for those surviving, so far we only have one isolate. So isolation of virus from the cerebral spinal fluid is a bad sign, correlate with very bad prognosis. Next slide, please. As far as clinical features are concerned, two features definitely associated with very bad prognosis. One is, of course, abnormal dorsal reflex and tachycardia. Both these point to involvement of the brainstem, the neuron, the brainstem. If these two signs present, clinical sign present, was present in the patient, the probability the patient will die is 0.04. That means out of 100 patients with these two signs, 84 of them will die. If the patient without this, any of these, the chances of dying is actually 0.02. That means out of 100, probably only 2 will die. This definitely correlates with very bad prognosis. Next slide, please. As far as histopathological finding, during the acute phase, you can see that this is the blood vessel in the brain, and this is a giant cell formed from the fusion of the endothelial cell, and this is the thrombosis that occur, that block of the artery. When there is block of the artery, there is fibrinal necrosis. You see the rarefaction. Next slide, please. And not only that, the virus also replicates a neuron. This is the neuron, and this is the inclusion body. Next slide, please. And of course, at that time, the initial diagnosis earlier is Japanese encephalitis, and probably you all will be wondering why Malaysia take 6 months to come to a diagnosis. And this is the often question asked, why it take 6 months to come to a diagnosis of Nipah virus rather than earlier they chased on the Japanese encephalitis. There are two reasons to it. The first, of course, the most important is that most of the time, the doctor or the scientist made the diagnosis first without analyzing the cause. and they try to find something to fit into the diagnosis. So when earlier, before September 1998, when the pig start to die, the veterinary surgeon involved, they think the pig having classical swine fever. They think it's a swine fever, so it's just a normal thing. So they think, never mind. And then, in fact, when the patients start to come with encephalitis, most of the doctors, in fact the doctors or the scientists, because of association of pigs, so the jump conclusion is Japanese encephalitis. And the second reason, actually, myself and Prof. Lan, actually we are working with the University of Malaya. University of Malaya is under the Ministry of Education. We are not involved early. We are only called to help out in summit towards the end of February when the disease has spread to the southern states. And in fact, when we are called to help out the diagnosis, we are in fact pressurized to confirm all this patient who died is a Japanese encephalitis. Next slide, please. Despite there are features which suggest it's not Japanese encephalitis. Japanese encephalitis is endemic in Malaysia. Over the 10 years, from 1988 to 1998, we have about 531 cases of Japanese encephalitis. Death, about 30 cases. So average per year, just 3 cases. Not only that, the cases who die, mainly adult pig handler, they are not children. The normal Japanese encephalitis, mainly children. And the other thing is that there are some patients who actually recover. We don't have unable to show seroconversion. And also, there are actually, at that time, the initial diagnosis is Japanese encephalitis, so a lot of vaccination being done, but it doesn't seem to control the disease. And on top of that, the pigs is dying. Of course, these features was now. You ask any scientist or any doctors in Malaysia, they say, oh yes, these are the features they thought of. But before the virus was announced, despite we tell them this thing, of course they still thinking of Japanese encephalitis. That's why when I first involved, we asked the ministry to diagnose the Japanese encephalitis. And next slide, please. So on the 1st of March, actually, when we received samples from the encephalitis patient, we take this opportunity not just to inoculate the CSF into mosquito larvae. For Japanese encephalitis, the diagnosis in Malaysia at that time is mainly serological to measure serum IgM. But we proceed actually to do more than that. We inoculate not only the mosquito larvae head, we also inoculate into tissue culture. But if for Japanese encephalitis, the mosquito cell line normally use C636, I take the opportunity to expand, to include other cell lines. And not only that, we also inoculate into some suckling mice. Next slide, please. And Nipah virus is a virus which can culture very easily. They grow very fast. Within 5 days after inoculation, one a sample, we get syncytial cell formation. And this syncytial cell formation, to my limited knowledge in virology, the first thing I recognize is something unusual. The thing which the closest I can remember actually, when culture RSV virus, namely RSV syncytial virus, in HEP2 cell, you also get syncytial formation. And the hallmark of paramyxoid virus is syncytial formation. When on the 5th day, when I got this the virus CPE, I tried to convey to a lot of my colleagues, and also, in fact, my superior, that we most likely dealing with a new virus. In fact, I was turned down. In fact, they asked me to throw away, most likely contamination. And luckily, I didn't follow instruction. The first thing in my mind, if it's a new virus, serologically useless because we don't have reagent to test. The most important thing, I must grow enough virus out to use as a reagent. So, by the 3rd day, when the cell had full CPE, I harvest this one and then prepare the antigen. The first thing to do is to see whether the person infected with encephalitis, do they got antibody against this virus. Next slide, please. So by the 7th day with full CPE, we harvest the cell to try to check whether the patient got antibody against this virus. And next slide, please. And true enough, we find that the patient have strong antibody, react to the virus. This is the viral cell. The Chinese cell fixed already and show the patient an antibody against this. At the same time, using the same antigen, we try to identify the virus. We use whatever antibody we have against all the paramyxoid virus, like measles, mumps, respiratory syncytial, parainfluenza. But unfortunately, all negative. And at the same time, I knew to deal with new virus is to actually have a quick look at the electron microscope. So at the same time, straight away, we brought the virus, try to fix a cell. Normally, it takes about 4 days. When this thing happened, I tried to announce, in fact, to tell the person, the superior. In fact, they were very reluctant to accept still we are dealing with a new virus. And until, the next slide, please. We prepared the EM, and using the EM, this is a 2000 magnification to confirm. These are the cell outline, and these are the nucleus of the cell to show confirm these are all syncytial cells. And not only that, there are internuclear inclusion in some nucleus. And because of the problem to be accepted, because dealing with new virus, at that time we are in fact exhausted whatever reagent to confirm the virus. So, at the end, we had to push the ministry to get the help of CDC to try to identify the virus. The next slide, please. In our university, we don't have a good electron microscope. We don't have a good picture. And this is the one when I went over to see the Fort Collins CDC. Straight away, under this electron micrograph, you can see the virus budding from here. And this is a viral particle. The hallmark of paramyxoid virus actually is to look for this circle. You see the small triangle section. Here it's very obvious. Of the ribonucleic protein complex. Next slide, please. Next slide. And of course, this is a negative study of the ribonucleic proteins carried out in the CDC Atlanta to show this classical, descriptive herringbone of the ribonucleic complex of the virus. Next slide, please. And of course, when I went over there, the antigen slide all prepared already. The moment arrived there, using the serum against Hendra virus, it showed that the antibody reacts strongly to the infected cell. Straight away, we know this virus is a paramyxoid closely related to Hendra. Next slide, please. And of course, we tried to amplify the virus genome using the Hendra primer. There is no amplification. And at that point, straight away, we know this is a paramyxoid virus related to Hendra, but not Hendra virus. And of course, using the experience of the paramyxoid virus sequence, we know the P genes of the paramyxoid virus just before the insertion of the G residue to produce the VIP and messenger RNA, there's an area just above it, is very conserved. And amongst the Hendra, Mobili and Respiro, we know it's a AAA, 5A, GGG, before actually this area very conserved. So we designed the primer. Again, this region, we are able to get 140 base pair application. And after sequencing, there are more than 10 nucleotide difference from the Hendra virus. And this draw the conclusion without doubt, this is a new virus. And as far as the virus concerned, just to share with you how we name how the virus name come about. Next slide, please. The virus is named after the place called Sungai Nipah. Sungai is actually a river, Nipah, Sungai Nipah, and this is actually the house of the patient we first isolated the virus in this village. And you look at the foreground, you see there's some of the zinc roof here. These are actually the pig farm. But the patient actually, we first isolated the virus, is actually not a pig farm, it's a lorry driver. And he's the one who have to load the pigs up. And the word Nipah actually, although we name after the village name actually come from, next slide please, come from this, the name of this palm tree. And this is Nipah palm. This is it's a small plant. This plant can grow, this palm can grow to the height of about 30 feet. And the leaf of this palm is actually to make the attack roof. Earlier you see the slide spraying the malaria. The roof is actually made of this leaf, and the palm actually when grow big, the palm is harvest to product, to harvest the flower, we call it staple flower. And next slide, please. But as far as the virus is concerned, it's already sequenced until the end of the G, and now it's, we know quite a lot about the virus. The virus, in fact, is very closely related to Pandora, and because they are so close that the early part of the sequencing is actually based on the primer of the Pandora virus. And the virus, this Pandora new part, in fact now is more or less going to name under new genus, under the family Paramyxovirida. And the unusual thing about this Pandora new part virus is that they have a huge genome size as compared to the others, it's only about 50 to 16 kb. This is about 18 plus kb. And very closely, if you look at the genome size, in fact they are closer to filovirus like Ebola or Marburg virus. And if you look at the coding region of the virus, in fact, they are actually almost the same length. What makes a difference in length is actually the non-coding area of the messenger RNA, especially the 3' area. This is a clear 3'. Of course, the M is an exception. Instead of P genes, the 3' non-coding area is unusually long. That accounts for the length of the virus. But whether this accounts for the heterogeneity, we don't know. And now it's clear, next slide please. These two viruses will be put under new genus, and tentatively we already coined the word called Nipah virus, derived from the word Pandora Nipah. So the new genus will include these two viruses. But with knowing the virus, the correct measures taken, of course the virus, the epidemic is controlled. Next slide please. So this is actually the cutting in Malaysia. And this is Dr. Kaizak, the chief of the CDC Special Branch Pathogen. This is our Director General of Health. Before they're able to accept this new virus, the direction they take in the control in, is mainly on GE, is very different. Next slide, please. And of course, when talking at GE, they fog the area, try to remove the mosquitoes. But the moment we know Nipah virus, the paramyxovirus, no point fogging, the most thing is to, most important is to remove this infected pigs. So with the important things that to get identified correct agent, right control measures to stop the epidemic. Now we're stopping the epidemics, then will come the issue where the virus comes from. Next slide please. So the come the next question, where the virus come from? And knowing the agent, we control the epidemic. But now is to prevent the future occurrence of the epidemic. And basing on, next slide please. Basing on the experience of Pandora virus emerged in 1994 in Australia, and two places, one is, one area is called the area called Pandora, the other is Mackay. And Pandora virus has been isolated from the giant fruit bats or something called the flying foxes. So based on this experience, at the time of outbreak, wildlife surveillance was done. Next slide, please. And the wildlife surveillance was done by the Australian scientist, Dr. Fumesfield, and in collaboration of the scientists in the Veterinary Research Institute. They collected not only the bats, they also looked at the other wildlife, like the wild boar, rodents, and of course, the only thing significant finding is that of the bats, 324 bat species are collected, and of these, the important one is the giant fruit bats belong to the family Theropus family, and for the small fruit bats, and these are the one normally captured by putting a mist net, and for the big bats. And normally they have to shoot them because they stay high on the canopy of the trees, and because of the big size, no way to trap them. An important thing to find that of these, this species, Theropus hypogonus, these fruit bats are actually found mainly in the island. It's about when they open up, the wingspan about nearly 1.5 to 2 feet. This is about nearly 3 feet. And important is that out of 41, 11 of them have neutralizing antibody against Nipah virus. Next slide, please. Attempt to isolate the virus, from the tissue derived from dead bat, either fortunately or unfortunately, failed to do that. And in fact, recently, for nearly a year, because we can't obtain the answer and the urgent need to identify the host, and in fact, I managed to persuade my superior to actually to give me a video camera, some sort of that, to go and study the condition. And for me, my approach is very different, because to obtain the giant fruit bats, you have to use a gun to shoot them. And in fact, I don't have a gun. So my approach is very different. Next slide, please. I in fact surveyed a number of colonies. These are all island fruit bats. It's called Theropus hypobalanus. And to know this, the improved approach to collect sample, and at that time of outbreak, I had the opportunity actually to join with Dr. Fumes Field to learn to track some of the bats. And I'm actually doing some necropsy on the bats. The thing I learned about bats is that crossed my mind, the bats actually, their chest is very well developed. The abdominal cavity actually very small. So the first thing clinched my mind, when these bats, they come back to rest, they hang upside down. So they have a full stomach, they must try to clear something. So the best thing to collect actually, either the feces or the urine. And I knew when the bats come back, before they go back to sleep, they must actually clear whatever waste content they have. And based on this, next slide please, my approach is very different. Instead of shooting the bats, I put this plastic sheet and then try to collect the sample. And to use this approach, it's not just put a plastic sheet whole day, no. Because if you put too long, all the dirt, everything can collect there, because the plastic sheet carries static electricity, the fungus will all stuck there. But our hypothesis is that because the bat might come back from feed early morning, normally 5 a.m., they'll come back, they should normally urinate or defecate before they sleep. And my hypothesis turned out to be true. Next slide, please. And this is the bat, one of the other fruit bats, and this is a female. And normally they hang upside down. Even you try to shoot them at this no point, when they're dead, their claws will be locked into the branches. You can't get that down unless you climb a tree and try to pick them down. And next one, please. And this is just to show when they want to defecate or urinate, they use their claw, pull themselves out, their urine orifices come down. Next slide, please. And on the plastic sheet. And that's where we collect sample. And actually, this approach is in fact simple and very efficient and better. You can repeat and repeat. And you can collect huge sample, in fact. If you shoot the bats, in fact, giant fruit bat in Malaysia is a protected species. You can only shoot a limited number. And this approach, in fact, you can correct periodically. The reason, because I feel the excretion of virus may not be all the time. It can be periodical. Actually, it turned out to be true. Next slide, please. Not only collect the sample, I also study the bats, their habits. This is the eat the mango. And normally they eat the mango, they may not eat all, they take some, they may fly off, and another one may come and share. So if they carry any virus or anything, chances will transmit to the next one. And next one, please. And it's more important is these fruits they eat. This fruit in Malaysia, we use we call the word jambu air. Air in water, jambu is a type of fruit, and this fruit is very juicy. And this is one of the fruits, the fruit that you love best. Next slide, please. And sometimes whatever the fruits eaten halfway, drop down. The moment it dropped down, I collected the swab sample for isolation. Using this approach, and in fact, I went over to collect a sample, make three field trips. Using this approach, the first field trip from the urine, I isolated another new paramyxovirus. Next slide, please. And of course, now this virus, I finished characterizing it. We named it human virus after the island where we isolated the virus. And this virus is also a paramyxovirus. You see the viral particle with the projection of plepomia, and inside is a leukocapsid. And in fact, this virus was isolated during my first visit when I collected 250 samples somewhere in the end of August. And 1 week later, I went back to the same place. I collected, in fact, 1,000 more samples. I don't have any other virus. The third trip I made in this year, June, in fact, this time, I isolated 19 isolated virus and all caused syncytial. And not only that, three of them have been confirmed to be a Nipah virus. And another four isolated a human virus. And again, next slide please. I isolated another new paramyxo virus, which now I run out of name to rename the island. So I call it Pulau virus. Pulau means for the English word means island. And this Pulau virus, in fact, is very interesting. Serologically, it's stained up with Hendra virus antibody and Nipah antibody. But you try to amplify with the Hendra primer and the Nipah primer, they fail to be amplified. And of course, this virus haven't been characterized. And by, I won't surprise this virus will be again a new member of the new genus of the paramyxo virus. But knowing now the Nipah virus, the reservoir, in fact, maybe more or one reservoir is a giant fruit bat. The question is how the virus actually introduced into the pig population. And looking back, all it could be more than one factors led to the introduction of the virus in the pig. As in 1990s, in fact, from 1995-96 onwards, we used to experience haze. I'm sure that maybe you can read in the newspaper, the whole of Southeast Asia blanket with haze because of the forest fire in Indonesia. Indonesia just beside Malaysia. Indonesia cleared very extensive land to try to clear the land for agriculture purposes. They in fact, because of the same cost, they cleared the forest by burning. And during 1997, also because of the El Nino phenomenon, we experienced drought. So with the haze, blanket cut out the sunlight and the drought, there is actually decreased production of fruit in the agriculture sector. If this translated into the forest, that means the amount of fruits actually in the forest will be very little. So this fruit bats, the next slide please, it would come to the farm, and this is actually the picture taken in the Ipoh farm. And this is the epicenter, which I feel is the epicenter of the outbreak of the introduction of virus in the farm. And these fruit trees, you look carefully, these fruits, it's called Jambu Ayazo. It's a fruit loved best by the giant fruit bats. And these fruits, not only that, the way the pig farm was constructed, you see the roof of the pig star, pig pen, and you see the wall. The roof was purposely built inside the wall. The reason, because I asked the pig farmer, when it rained, the water dropped, go inside there. At first, I thought they would get the rainwater to help to clean the pig pen, but it's not. Because pigs love water. So when it rains, the pig will come here to enjoy themselves. So the pig pen was built in such a way, whatever dropped on the roof would drop inside, instead of dropping outside. Next slide, please. So whatever half-eaten fruits all will drop inside here. So it happened, the fruit half-eaten by the bats, or the virus, the pigs will pick up, and that's where they transmit to the pigs. And in fact, in my earlier trip, I isolated three Nipah virus. In the last trip, two from the urine, one actually from the half-eaten of these fruits. Thank you. Thank you.
大体お分かりいただけたと思うんですけども、ちょっと分からない、単語で、例えば、ヘンドラバイラスって話ありましたけども、このパラミストっていうのは先ほどちょっと僕もイントロダクション言いましたけれども、ハシカとかオタフカゼとかそういうウイルスがパラミストウイルス科に入るんですけども、1994年ぐらいですか、オーストラリアで新しいパラミストでヘンドラバイラスっていうのが取れまして、これが確かこの先ほどの、コウモリからですね、馬か何かに馬だったと思うんですけど、移って、それでまた人間に行くというようなものが私取れたわけですね。 それがあのヘンドラバイラス。このヘンドラバイラスと先ほど何回もありましたように非常に近い種類のウイルスであるということが発表されましたし、このストーリーから言いますと、これは実はあの後から聞いた話ですけど、1998年が一番最初で、98年の時日本にこの材料を持ってきたらしいんですね。日本農園のと間違って、それで日本でウイルスを分離したんですけども、その時は日本農園と思ってましたから、なんていうんですか、昆虫の細胞でしか分離しなかったと。それがもし昆虫以外の細胞で分離してたら、98年に日本で取れた可能性あったんですけども、このウイルスは昆虫で増えないウイルスだったんですよ。日本農園と思ってやったの間違いで、まあ彼はある意味ではラッキーだと思うんですけども、日本で分離されたら今頃分離じゃありませんので、まあそういうようなストーリーがあったということですね。それからこれは農園の起こる、ウイルスで、死亡率が非常に高いですね、感染してから。非常に重要なことだと思うんですけども、それで先ほどニパって話しました。ニパはあの村の名前ですけども、なんでそのニパかというと、あれニパヤシというのヤシがありますね。あれがたくさん生えているところがニパ村らしいんで、そこで取れたのでニパウイルスであるというようなことも言われました。それから何回も言われましたように、この感染というのは、この、コウモリがですね、食べた唾液がどうも唾液の中にウイルスがあるそうで、コウモリの果物のところにはウイルスがあると、それからコウモリからコウモリに移るわけですね。それからコウモリの便とか尿の中にからウイルスが取れてますから、それから行くと、それから、コウモリが食べた、果物が落ちてですね、それが豚が食べて、それから人間に行くというような感染ルートがあるらしいです。このウイルスというのは、まあ、こういうふうにして非常に増殖も早い、まあ、比較的分離しやすいウイルスだそうですけれども、いずれにしてもこのエマージェングウイルスというのがどんどん出てまいりますけれども、普通の状態ではないところで、ジャングルとかそういうところであったウイルスが人間または動物がそこから近づきますと、こういう人間には今まで感染したことないウイルスというのが人間の社会に入ってきて、先ほど豚では、マレーシアで100万頭以上殺したという話がありましたけれども、このように非常に重要な災害になって我々に襲いかかるウイルスであるというようなことが多分騒いだったと思いますけれども、もし時間があまりないんですけれども、何分あるんですか、伊藤先生。5分ぐらいありますか。5分ぐらい、2、3もし質問があれば、どうぞ。もし時間がちょっとセーブするためで質問の人前に出てですね、並んでいただいたら、それで非常に短い質問をしていただいたわけです、はい、どうぞ。
Do bats die of the disease or get sick?
So far, in a nature setting, we don't know. But the experiment study in Australia, Animal Health Laboratory in Geelong, they so far have done two studies. I know the result of the one of them. They injected the Nipah virus into the giant foot rats, of course not this species, the related species, where they isolated the Hendra virus. It's called the Toropus polioencephalus. In fact, the none of the bats show any sign of sickness, not even fever. After 7 days of inoculation, they are able to isolate the virus from the urine. But they didn't try to isolate from the saliva, because they do the experiment earlier before I got this result. When I told them I isolate one of the part from the swab of the fruit, they said, goodness, we should try to isolate from the saliva. But I don't know the second part of the study, they did it or not.
Thank you. One more question. In the Philippines, there have been reported, two at least, reports on the isolation of Ebola virus. And judging from your story, I guess you might have also have Ebola virus in your bats. Is it one of the possibility?
Can I clarify one thing first? The isolate Ebola from the bats?
Yeah.
Is it bats tissue?
Yes.
In fact, I was about to suggest to use the same method to actually collect sample for Ebola virus isolation. We know the Ebola restaurant strain of virus exists in Philippines. But in Malaysia as well, we know, as far as I know, last year, there's a Japanese scientist, Professor Niromi, in fact came to our place. I took him down we try to look at some of the monkey whether got the antibody or not. Unfortunately, we can't get cooperation from the person in charge. So no study was done.
Thank you.
今の、関西圏国際協力室長ですが、いいですね、日本語で聞いて、簡単な質問です、先ほどの説明ですと、コウモリ、野生のコウモリが、普通に持ってる中でいいようですか、まあ、一つ目の質問です、ね、
トランスレート
して、 May I ask you that、I'd like to clarify your explanation of that、according to your explanation, is it possible to think about that the fruit, wild fruit bat usually, normally, have the Nipah virus in wild fruit? Is that right? Is that correct?
My hypothesis is that the virus already exists with the giant fruit bats, not the small one. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are 70 over species of bats in Malaysia. There are 5 family of bats actually belong to fruit bats family. The smaller one, so far, antibody don't show any significant. Only the 2 giant fruit bats, something called flying foxes. I believe this, the Nipah virus could exist with them, but there is no opportunity to transfer to the new host. And because of the multiple factors involved, the virus got the chance to introduce into the different host.
Okay. My viewpoint is that there is simple for the... fruits quarantine of the viewpoint. Okay, I'd like to ask you the second question. Are there any some fruits quarantine in your country? For example, to the restriction for the mangoes.
Oh, I see. I think as far as there is no quarantine, but I think don't have to worry because the fruit bats, their natural behavior. They seldom come to human activity. They normally feed on fruits, mainly in the wild. Unless not enough fruits, or destroy the forest, or some reason enough fruits, they only go to human activity. If they've got a choice, they will shy from human activity, especially if there's a light, if you talk to, in fact, I come to know some of the behavior of bats, you just need to light a fire, a nearby a light, the fruit bat will not come to your fruit trees. But normally, the fruits culture in Malaysia is near human activity, hardly any fruit bat will come. And normally it's the fruits, if you eat them like the fruit bats, they will actually drop down, normally not harvested. So as far as there is, I don't think the need to look at it, the quarantine.
All right, thank you very much.
要するにフルーツは心配せんでいいと。日本に輸入しているのはペナルティしなくてもいいということですね。まあ、そういうことだと思います。安心して食べてくれたと思います。
はい。Can I add one thing? In fact, yeah, something to add on. But as far as the fruits concerned, mangoes is actually one of the fruits with our enzyme. I don't think the wild will survive long there. It's the other fruits called jamu ai. They are very sweet, bland, very watery, and that's the one the virus can survive longer. But in fact, we have a plan to study the survival of the virus in all these fruits. But because now the virus is put on people, we have to pull our horses back to try to do this type of experiment.
Finance. Last question.
I'm Dr. Okaming, NIID. I'd like to ask some patient that a relapse or recurrent patient. I heard it about. But yeah, what the prognosis of the patient, recurrence or relapse patient? And also, are there any new relapse or recurrence patients?
As far as relapse, the answer is yes. In fact, of the worry of the relapse, in fact, one of the reasons actually I'm here. I actually come here because especially I want to learn the co-cultivation method from Dr. Wende. He's the one who isolated the SSB measles virus. And I believe these relapse cases, the virus must be some bit effective. In fact, I have no opportunity to show some of the X-ray, the MRI. The pattern is different. During the acute phase, the changes on the MRI finding are very different. And mainly, actually, these are due to thrombosis, blocking of the vessel with microinfarct. The relapse patient, the finding in MRI is very different. the area confined in one area and mainly on the cortex, mainly the neurons are the cortex, and they extend from there, slowly extend outwards. And we, in fact, earlier part, we had one patient who had just mild illness. 11 weeks later, he came with severe illness and passed away. We tried the usual cultivation method. We can't isolate virus, but we can actually detect the virus antigen on the brain. Cultivation failed. So I believe this probably some changes in the virus. But as far as the labs, recently we have another two cases, but the patient haven't died.
Thank you very much.
これでまあ質問は終わらせていただいて、後からですね、またご質問ある人は廊下でもしていただいて、ご質問もらえますし、ここはパーティーもあるそうですから、パーティーでも質問されたらいいと思いますけれども、それではこれで申し上げます。